I was afraid there'd be one like you here tonight. Well, even in terms of these bylines, which are sort of like 2.5-minute reports that we will give on a specific subject, we try, yes, we have a point of view, but we don't advocate any particular action, and we don't editorialize per se. We try to assemble the facts. Obviously, something of what you feel comes through. I'm rather embarrassed that my next byline is going to be on Santa Claus. I've had very bad experiences with Santa Claus recently, and I feel extremely strongly about it, and it's going to be a byline next week. But in a serious way, yes, we know that people identify with us as persons. This is one of the reasons for success of our show and the success perhaps of the news like Walter Cronkite. You try to keep the personality out of it, but of course you can't. You said earlier we were artists. Well, no, we're not, but we are becoming personalities, and again, you hope to have some balance. And some people do like to know what we think. I think more of our audience wants, you know, will say, keep your own opinions to yourself and just, you know, bring out the other person. But perhaps if you watch us over the years, you have some feeling of how we feel. Frank McGee and I argue all the time now on small things like theater and we agree in a lot of things. We disagree in a lot of things, too, and that's rather exciting, I think, on a program to be able to say it. We said today, Joe and Frank and I, that none of the three of us sent... Rather exciting, I think, on a program to be able to say it. We said today, Joe and Frank and I, that none of the three of us sent out Christmas cards, and I think we've lost 2 million sentimental Christmas card writers, as well as the entire greeting card industry. Jacqueline Kennedy. When I first began on the Today program, I was a writer, and one of my very first assignments was to be sent on this, what was then an unofficial trip with Mrs. Kennedy to India and Pakistan. Do you remember when she took that trip? And unofficially, about 700 of us trooped along. There were 10 women, 10 female reporters. I was the only one from television. And we were gone for 3.5 weeks. And in the 3.5 weeks, my entire conversation with Mrs. Kennedy consisted of saying, excuse me, Mrs. Kennedy, but there's a bobby pin falling out of your hair. And she said, thank you. And you can't build too much on that. And I found myself in those weeks being rather resentful because it was making the job so difficult. And it was a very grueling trip. When she worked, we worked. When she rested, we worked. She never gave a press conference. She never met with any of the reporters. She never talked with any of us. Until the last day, she called the women together and gave us each a hand-painted box that she'd selected for us in Pakistan and said, look, I know it's been difficult for you and it's been rather trying, and it has for me as well. And then I remembered one day when she went into a temple, and as you all know, cows are sacred in India, so you take your shoes off, you don't wear leather into the temple. She left her shoes outside. And a male reporter looked in her shoes and reported, and it was in Time and everything else, that she wore a size 10.5 shoe. Well, men won't understand this, but women don't want it reported that their shoe size unless they wear a 7, 4 maybe. But I remember thinking at that time that I was only looking at it from my point of view. I think this is the conflict with Mrs. Onassis, that she likes the, in a sense, encourages the limelight and the attraction of people, and at the same time has this sense of privacy. Whatever one thinks of her, I find her probably the most fascinating woman of our time, precisely because we know so little really about what she's like. My experience with Mr. Onassis was somewhat different, and I'll tell you that very quickly. Before he... my husband always says that this is high-class gossip, and I should... But before he was even going with Mrs. Onassis, by the way, speaking of news, I heard this. A friend of mine whose husband is involved with Kenneth's, the beauty salon, said to me on a Sunday, you know, this Thursday, Jackie Kennedy and Aristotle Onassis are going to be married. And I told the news department, and they said, oh, for heaven's sake, you. And that night, I heard it on Huntley Brinkley. I was home. I remember sitting in the bed, and I got up screaming, I told you, I told you. And I think since then, if I ever had another scoop, no matter what I said, you know, if I said that tomorrow morning Richard Nixon was pregnant, I don't know, they would believe me. But And if you hear it said in the news, you'll know where it came from and that it's a mistake. But anyway, we had talked with Mr. Onassis about filming in his yacht because Olympia Airlines had just inaugurated a nonstop flight from New York to Athens, and there was some attempt on the part of his public relations people to show him as a man who did more than date Maria Callas, as a man of intelligence and charms. And I had thought that we would film and show his artworks, and they set up an appointment, and I went to see him at his office with two men from Shipping News, and it was deadly. They were discussing tonnage and cottage and freight, and I remember sort of sitting there and being hypnotized by the gold in his teeth, and I thought, I'm going to fall asleep. And finally, he invited us all to lunch, and we went to 21 for lunch. And in desperation, I said, Mr. Onassis, you have everything in the world now that a man could have, but I wonder, how did it all begin? What was your very first job? And I had, it was in a sense, this was the part of the inspiration for my book, because it was like saying the magic word in that old Groucho Marx show where the duck, you know, the floppy duck came down. He began to talk about his early life and how he had, his family had been living in Turkey and they were refugees, and he had immigrated to Argentina and was in the tobacco smuggling business and the whole saga of his early life. And I thought, if ever you sit next to a self-made man or woman, ask him what his very first job is. It's like asking about a first love, and everyone remembers that first job, and it really has anything to do with what he's doing today. Well, we got on fantastically, and finally he agreed that we could come and film, and I could see where the charm was. I really could when he began to talk, because he is amusing and he was sort of puckish. And I remember he said, I guarantee you, you will get on the yacht, but I don't guarantee you will get off. And I remember this was about, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and I bought a bikini and I had great thoughts. Well, we never did do it, because when the yacht was available for us, we weren't available for him. He was not married to Mrs. Onassis. We didn't think it was that important. The bikini is now too small, the whole thing. You know, we've never been able to get to him again. But those are my memories. I must say, my memories of President Nixon, or Dean Rusk, whom I think is one of the most touching men in history, a man totally sincere, whether you agree with what he said or not, and a man really abused by the country. I have great affection and esteem for Dean Rusk. I find him one of the few honest, decent, sincere men I know, and I hardly agree with many of the things that he did. I want to just tell you one Henry Kissinger story, since it's sort of fun to talk about people. Everything you read about him is true. You meet him and he's not, I mean, for a woman, certainly for the younger ones, you'd be completely turned off, because he looks like the sedate. I don't see any professors here who look quite like him. But, and he's kind of paunchy and wears horn-rimmed glasses, but funny and charming and flirtatious and brilliant, and makes you feel as if what he is saying, he has really sort of let you in on. He never tells you anything that you shouldn't know, but it's a very kind of personal thing, whether it's a large group of reporters or just one reporter. And I think this is why he has the affection and high regard of so many of the press. But I interviewed him this fall. It was the first, at this point, the only sort of in-depth interview he's done. So this fall, it was last year, so he wasn't, you know, quite as well known. It was long before the China plans. And I said, Dr. Kissinger, you're beginning to get this reputation as such a swinger. And he talks in rather monotonous voice with just a trace of this German accent. And I said, you hardly think of him as this swinging cat. And I said, you know, what is it like for you now that you're getting all this acclaim? And he said, oh, it's very good. He said, I can only tell you that now when I bore people, they think it's their fault. So before I bore you, and you know that it's not your fault but mine, thank you for letting me come here and being so patient with me when I was so late. And I've really enjoyed myself, and I hope you have as well. Good night.